Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Javier, it is less than a week until WrestleMania. This was the final episode of Raw, largely a Raw reinforcing what we already knew, which is fine. It's kind of sometimes what WWE does for the last 4 weeks before WrestleMania, where it's only the last week here. But I will ask you, what are the top five major developments on tonight's show? Just rattle them off for me. I'm sure you got them ready to go.
I mean, the ones that if you're referring to what I felt like they did more building towards, I think they the almost Brock Lesnar thing. I think they tried to push that a little bit further. The Austin Theory one, he finally got his actual shot back at Cena. I also liked the Asuka and Bianca Belair promos because the build to this has been thus far so bad that just going to straight up basics who these two are, I think did a world of good for that. And the Mysterio one just continues pushing along with. I mean, I'm worried for Dominic Mysterio because with that promo he cut in Spanish makes me think he's actually working through some real stuff. I think those are the ones that they really pushed the most. Because I mean, the Roman Reigns thing really wasn't so much advanced because you know he wrestled solo, and the other stuff is more like just touching base and reminding us that this is stuff that's coming up. But I think those other four were the ones that they need, and I think the one that really needed it was the Bianca Belair and Asuka one.
Yeah, and I was actually being kind of sarcastic, just in the sense that I didn't think there were any major developments, and my joke answer was going to be that Bobby Lashley's in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, not facing Bray Wyatt, and they basically confirmed that by putting his name at the top of the list that was pinned to the door. It's like when you find out who got what parts in a play, in high school, and it's pinned to the wall, and everyone gathers around. I didn't dislike this show. I think it was the right kind of show to have. Anything that you wait this long for major development on, there's probably an argument to be made you should have done it a week or two sooner so you can really drive it home on a show like this. So I thought it was fine. I mean, if you're into the WWE product and you're excited about WrestleMania, I thought this was a skippable show, but also a solid, enjoyable 3 hours because it put forward, I think, well-developed feuds, added a little bit of extra to them in terms of just hearing from, KO given a traditional fired up promo with Sammy just smiling next to him, like, yeah, you're fired up. We're going to make history. And video packages. And like you said, maybe the top development or the top sort of most memorable image was Brock Lesnar retreating when Omos, was physically dominant against him in a brief exchange, which is smart. If you're going to do this match, you want to do what you can to build intrigue with a straight face, sell the idea that Omos is unlike anything Lesnar's ever faced. So, yeah, I mean, they checked boxes along the way, and we got video packages. I'm with you. I thought the Asuka and Belair video packages made the match feel more important. I don't think having them share space in the ring was going to add anything. We'll explore more aspects of this as they go along. The thing that I want to talk about before we get to calls and emails is the main event of WrestleMania and the main event of Raw. Cody Rhodes takes on Solo Sikoa in a warm-up match of sorts that's leading to then a face-off between Cody and Reigns on Friday, and then Cody versus Reigns on Sunday night, capping off the weekend of WrestleMania. We'll get to the storyline development here, but Cody has had – I don't want to say good fortune because that makes it sound like happenstance, but he's had really good workers in WWE to be against, from Seth Rollins to Chad Gable and everyone in between. Solo Sikoa is not a top-level WWE worker at this point, and I think it showed. And I think Cody looked, in this match, the least equipped to be a guy carrying a main event slot in WWE after WrestleMania if he wins the title. Because I don't think he carried Solo to a better than expected match, and it's not a dig at Cody, I'm not trying to bury Solo. I just think collectively there wasn't magic happening in the ring. You know, they brawl, they went back and forth. You know, it seemed a little bit like Solo was kind of thinking his way through the match, and Cody was trying to keep things together and not have anything bad happen just 6 days before the big match. We had a long nerve hold, and then we had the distraction finish at the end. But what stood out to me is, and I don't think this was awful, and I don't think it's like, you know, headline worthy. It just, this was, I think, the least impressive that Cody looked. He still was fine, but I think he's really shined in just about anything he's done. And this was just sort of ordinary. What was your takeaway? What did you think, Javier? What do you think of what I had to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really, like, stand out to me, you know, and it definitely felt like it was something more playing it safe, because it felt definitely more like playing it safe, because, you know, we're 5 days away from, or 4 days, or 6 days away, probably, from him, before he has to, have the big match. So it does feel like it was a lot safer in what they were doing. I don't think it was a bad match. It felt more like an exhibition in any case, and really feel like a main event. It had parts of the match had the crowd going. So, you know, cause the I feel like the crowd really, you know, has bought into the actual, story, and a lot of Cody's matches really are more about the story anyway. That he's selling. So, if they give him the championship, I wouldn't worry so much, because, you know, he'll likely be feuding with people like Gunther and stuff like that after that. So, was it Randy Orton who was the, or was it Cody, the whole thing, if you need a 4-star match, I'll give you 3.5. If you need a 3-star match, I'll give you 3.5. Was that him?
It was. Both of them, actually. Yeah. Cody and Randy. I've used the Leroy Horde quote from, he was a former Minnesota Viking running back who backed up Robert Smith, who was a stellar running back for the Vikings during their great late 90s run with Randy Moss and Chris Carter and Dante Culpepper and Randall Cunningham and that fun group. And yeah, just a great, he was a great quote machine. And he said, if you need 1 yard, I'll get you 3. If you need 8 yards, I'll get you 3. That was his specialty, getting 3 yards. So, yeah, and 3.5 actually is generous. I think I was more 3 and 3 quarter when I would compare the Leroy Horde quote to what Randy and Cody typically delivered. When Cody's against a larger-than-life star and a really good athlete, Cody shines. This was neither of those things, so they're still pretty green. And it doesn't seem larger than life even. But, you know, he had the intrigue of Solo not having been pinned or submitted yet, and Heyman at ringside adding some star power. I mean, again, it was fine. I mean, it's. I think it was smart to put Cody out there and have an excuse for him to interact with the Bloodline, and it gave you a chance to build up the Usos against KO and Sammy a little bit with some physicality there too. So, again, it was good. It's just, you know, sort of paint by numbers and ended on a flat note for Cody a little bit.
And Cody was right. Solo's not ready.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, good facial expressions. And, you know, there was some drama just because Cody's hitting his signature moves. And you know, are they going to have Solo lose, or will there be interference first? I don't think many people thought Cody would lose going into WrestleMania despite Solo's storyline resume in WWE. Where do you stand? I know we saw Friday SmackDown, and I think what we see there is going to be, you know, significant. I don't know how significant, not in terms of a major angle, but just in terms of the final verbal back and forth between Cody and Reigns. But without having seen that, you know, how do you grade the hype for Cody challenging Reigns at WrestleMania in general, but also put it in perspective compared to your expectations, what you thought that they had to work with in the challenge, the headwind of how popular Sami Zayn was, and how Cody had been gone for a while, and some legit, you know, nervousness within WWE about whether Cody could overcome that. How do you grade them, and how were they done accomplishing their goals compared to your expectations, what you thought was likely to happen?
I mean, I swear, Wade, this is what I most wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
the overall thing. And yeah. We didn't plan this out or anything, because I think that the stuff they did with Cody I think I DM'd you once he kind of feels like a supervillain in the way that he plans things out, because that was like the big thing that we were talking about prior to the Royal Rumble was, you know, at that point is like that was what we were discussing. It's like, what do you do with Sammy? Do you, like, you know, cart him off in an ambulance to make it like obvious – you know, because, you know, with Cody coming in, that was a big worry, though. He's getting it booed because people are going to want Sammy in the Rumble. But ever since then, I think that they basically, you know, I don't want to sound negative, you know, because the words got negative connotation, but they, like, carnied the hell out of this. Like, manipulated the people, like, you know, with little things, like when we talked about Cody Rhodes raising Sami Zayn's hands, you know, to you know, basically signposting for people that this is, you know, Cody's the guy, you know, stuff like that. Little tricks that they played, which is, you know, Cody was the one who was responsible for, you know, ultimately getting what the fans wanted, which was KO and Sammy together. All that to draw attention, you know, towards, you know, draw attention to the left hand while him and the right hand are doing something else. And I think it's been great. And then you have Roman Reigns, who's actually, you know, who sold for Cody in respect to you know, their verbal back and forth. He has sold a lot for Cody. Heyman also, like, you know, legitimately today legitimately saying that, oh yeah, we're gonna cheat.
Yes, I love it.
Which is never, I mean, you know, this is the first time, you know.
Yeah.
So. You know, so stuff like that. I mean, they've put so much work into making this Cody thing happen that I will be surprised if Cody did not win. Particularly with the scathing, like passionate, which, you know, like emotional promo that Paul Heyman cut. You know, that after I heard that promo from Heyman, I'm like, and the way that he like, in a way, excoriated Cody. I'm like, Cody's got to win this. So,
elaborate on that. What's a little bit more on what Heyman said that caused you to think that?
It was like, you know, basically saying stuff like, you know, you know, you don't matter. You're the same Cody as before. You don't matter. You know, that, you know, you're just, you know, I mean, and I'm obviously, I don't remember it word for word, but like what I got out of it was like, you know, basically saying, you know, your father would have been disappointed in you essentially.
Yeah.
Without actually,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and he did like touch up on it, but without straight up saying that, that sort of thing where it felt like, and this actually goes to think what I think is going to happen after WrestleMania. Where I to the point where this feels more like an actual feud between that's developing into more of a feud between Heyman and Cody than it is Cody and Reigns, which makes mm-hmm. me think that if Reigns doesn't take any time off after this, and you know, and that's, you know, and Cody wins, that it plays into the future where now it's Cody feuding with Heyman and Heyman bringing people out. So one of the interesting moments from SmackDown was when Cody was wrestling Ludwig Kaiser and Paul Heyman came out. Ludwig Kaiser shared a look with, you know, with Heyman, which makes me think that if we see the dissolution of the Bloodline following WrestleMania, probably by the time we hit Backlash, that Heyman could, you know, because essentially lost his meal ticket, like Cody predicted, instead of going to Brock Lesnar, maybe goes to Gunther and then starts, you know, using Imperium to go after Cody and something along those lines, because it feels like this more, and part of it's because, you know, I'm assuming his Roman schedule, maybe they're also kind of like, you know, sunsetting him a little bit, you know, for, you know, if he is going to take a break. That's kind of like the impression I'm getting from the whole build towards this, is that it, not only they're building towards the match, but also kind of like starting to seed what's going to be coming afterwards.
Yeah, I still think there's so much they can do with the people in the Bloodline, you know, Jay and Jimmy and Solo. But and they gave away Solo Cody tonight, and they did it in a way that doesn't seem like it was a teaser of a full-fledged feud to come with Solo and Cody. And so in that sense, they played a card that reveals they're not looking at Solo as sort of the next opponent for Cody. I mean, if they do it, I think they did some damage tonight because the match wasn't particularly good, didn't stand out, and Cody won. I know Graves tried to frame it as, you know, Cody had help, because KO and Sammy offset the Usos' interference. Nice try, Corey, and I know, you know, he's just doing what he's told, you know, in the talking points, but that is not having help winning. That is having help not unfairly losing, but it hardly takes anything away from what Cody did in terms of winning. I'm still most intrigued, and I don't know, you know, if they'll do it, with Heyman managing, you know, Jimmy and Jay going after Cody one-on-one. I'm not sure about Heyman switching to Gunther, in part because I just think Gunther's so strong on his own, and in part because I just Heyman's going to stay within the bloodline. So I'm intrigued by all that. I'm not sold on the idea that Reigns won't, you know, just be back pretty quick for, you know, a rematch, you know, I don't know, whether it's a month or by SummerSlam and Cody gets sidetracked with something else briefly or just with Jimmy and Jay, we'll see. And that, you know, and it's also possible Reigns retains. I mean, I'm not assuming anything going into this match, in part because I think there's suspense if you're just a casual fan watching over who's going to win because Reigns has been so dominant. But, you know, they've told this story where Cody sort of has to win because otherwise everything Heyman has said is true unless they do a finish in a different way. So we'll see. I want to run a poll asking, you know, how confident people are in either Cody or Roman winning. You know, like, you know, have four options. Cody for sure, Cody probably, Reigns for sure, and get a sense of what people think out there.
Well, I mean, the only way I could see Cody, based on what we've seen in the build so far, the only way I can really see him losing if they're going to be doing what Todd Barton suggested, which would be then, you know, because it'd be such a devastating loss, you would have to turn him heel at this point. Because, I mean, that's been my issue with Drew McIntyre, the WrestleMania back from COVID, that where he lost to Lashley, that was such a devastating loss. I don't think he ever bounced back from that. And I think that might be, you know, the same kind of scenario, because I mean, they have built this, like, you know, this is his moment. This story, like, I mean, seriously, like the build to this has been like, you know, 95% Cody and like 5% Roman Reigns saying I'm more, you know, Heyman saying that Roman Reigns is worried about Cody, you know? So if you turn around and have Reigns, like, just straight up, like, beat him, you know, unless you have like a massive angle, planned, the only other step I think from Cody would be to turn heel, and you know, you do the double turn that Tom Martin kind of talked about on the picks. So outside of that, that's pretty much, you know, what I got for that.
All right, well let's pause, and we got a lot more to talk about from Raw and explore as we do a lot of WrestleMania talk this week on our podcast. Let's pause and just formally introduce ourselves in the show and give out the information on how we can have people participate in the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 27th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and podcast. And I appreciate you joining us tonight on the show at your convenience on various podcast apps. Appreciate you being a listener. Help spread the word, let people know on social media, and just word of mouth. Just go to a grocery store. Just start telling people, are you a WWE fan? Check out Wade Keller's show. We appreciate the word of mouth, not just social media, spreading the word. I'm Wade Keller, and the other voice you hear is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor. Javier, it's great to have you here for the whole show tonight. How's it going?
It's going well. Really glad to be able to talk about WrestleMania with it only being a couple days ago. A couple days away.
Breaking news. Tell us the results. Time machine. Javier. Very good. So we invite you to participate in this show. As always, if you are live streaming the show here on Monday night, you are invited to call us. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's see. Is there anything else I want to say? No. Let's get to phone calls. Our first VIP Express caller of the day is Chris from Oklahoma. Chris, you are first up. Welcome to the show. What do you think of Raw?
I absolutely loved it, and I'm just curious. I actually wrote down bullet points of what I want to talk about tonight. That's how much I loved it. There's like three different things that caught my eye. The first thing was What did you think of Austin Theory's promo? Because I thought that was the best promo of his young career that he'd done tonight. That was pre-taped.
You know, it's one thing they did on the show that I like, Javier, is it felt, and not everybody's going to appreciate this, and not everyone's going to like it, even if they sort of, you know, recognize what WWE was trying to do. But I like the idea that they did different things to promote different matches. You know, there's a variety of techniques and settings in terms of video packages, matches, promos. And then you had the empty arena promo from Austin Theory. Didn't have fans to react to, didn't have fans heckling him, what chanting him. And it was a serious stare straight into the camera, intense. I wouldn't call it a rebuttal, but a counterpunch, I guess. I don't know. Those are sort of same things. But to John Cena, what he had to say to him a couple of weeks back, what'd you think of the setting? What'd you think of what Theory did to get his point across and you know, kind of do that final hard pitch for the Cena match? Because no Cena this week. We got that one thing from Cena, and that was it.
Well, I thought I made for a striking image and, you know, worked with what he had to say. Although I couldn't help but think that, wow, his detractors are going to say, look at that. They don't trust him to cut a promo in front of an audience, so they had to do it in an empty arena is what I was thinking about his went to the detractors. But, this was the version of Theory that I saw back in Evolve. That made me think that he, you know, that there's something here, that he carried himself as like a someone to be taken seriously. And I really like the idea, you know, that, you know, what he said about Cena, where, you know, he's going to basically like make him believe in Theory, you know. So I thought it was a very good thing, a very good promo, and it was the setting added to it. I think it added to it a lot. And you know, it does have the benefit where, like you said, people are not going to be heckling and you are listening to what he has to say. So, in particular, since like, it felt like they were overboard, the crowds have been going overboard with the, chants lately. I this was kind of like the, you know, next time Tom Martin asks you about point at something that Theory's done, you have one you could point to now, I think.
Well, I always did. It doesn't mean that I'll like be able to recall it on the spot, but I think he's been consistently showing signs that he has a nice upside, and I understand why there's key people in management who believe in him, and I think he's going to be. I think he likely is going to rise to the top tier and be there for a while, and I think there's a chance he's a top guy. This was a good promo. It was a good delivery. It was, you know, in some ways there's more pressure and it's tougher, but you don't have the adrenaline rush of the crowd. Or, you know, some people think being live is more difficult, and I think for some people it is. But in other ways, when you sort of know you have a net, like, oh, I screwed up, let me start over, it can make you more likely to screw up and start over. And in this, you know, he's used to just being in front of a crowd, reacting to their energy. I mean, Baron Corbin, I talk about, he's so much better in front of a crowd than he is in backstage skits. His acting drops, you know, way down when he doesn't have that live crowd to react with. But yeah, this seemed like a serious Austin Theory. And I think one of the goals with Theory, and this, you know, I was hoping for more back and forth with Cena and Theory, mostly before Cena's first promo, because I think Cena's promo was not a great choice of direction or angle to take, but you know, Cena shows up and does his thing and he's a big enough deal now people don't really want to get in his way, but I didn't like it. But overall, when this feud was first rumored and then kind of locked in, I was like, oh, this should be good. You know, this would be good for Theory, good for Cena, to interact with somebody fresh he's never interacted with before. We didn't get much of that. So what we did get is Theory trying to, and I think succeeding in being a more serious person. You know, it's not selfies and you know, no remnants of the way and you know, being a goof. This is someone who says, you know, Cena, people think that you exposed me on the mic, but what really happened is you exposed that you can't see the future right in front of your eyes. He delivered that with you know, confidence, with certitude. And he said he doesn't want to be the next John Cena. He said, you know, that he wants Cena looking up at him at the end. I mean, yeah, it was just a good, you know, serious promo. And I didn't come across as overly arrogant or overly heelish, but it was you know, a guy with confidence. And I don't think it's, you know, enough to get people who are Cena fans to think Austin Theory is in Cena's league, but I think it's enough to make people who look at Theory as a joker doesn't belong in the ring and he's just going to be squashed. Like, you know, in LA Knight might be, you know, against a Bray Wyatt in a first feud. Although that was a little more competitive to a degree than I think some people even thought. But I think this made people think, oh, you know what? Theory is framing himself, or he's being framed as a serious star taking on a serious star of another generation. And I think that one of the key line was the closing line, which is, I'm going to make Cena believe in him and I'll make the fans believe in him. And I do think probably that's a bit of a tell that that's the mission for this match. Javier?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that is, I mean, this is just the first step. Now it's going to be what happens in the match. And I would have in my list of importance, I would have that match listed higher if there was more back and forth between Cena.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's my concern, that now that they've announced that's the opening match, is it because Cena just wants to get on a plane and go back, you know, go do whatever he wants to do? What is Cena going to do in the match? That is, you know, up for question. But if they could have like a really, like, you know, try to steal the WrestleMania with just the first match and you know, Theory really, you know, show out, I think this could be, you know, this is like, I don't want to say make or break for him, but it is a massive, massive, you know, biggest, obviously the biggest moment in his career. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, we'll go back to Chris in Oklahoma. Any follow-up on that or another bullet point?
I was honestly thinking the same thing as Javier, that it was when they announced the first match, I'm like, okay, Cena's going to do this match and get the heck out of Dodge. And I'm like, after many first announcements, that's the first time I've ever seen them announce a match order before a show to know when it's going to be on. I've never seen that before in WWE to ever do that, unless it's like a main event, you know. But my second one is kind of lighthearted and a little bit, but that the film that the short bit that they did for the Bloodline Goodfellas spoof was actually making me laugh out loud. I was like, it was perfect. And I think that, to me, that was the best for last on them short films. And I have one more point, and then I'm gonna let y'all talk, and I'll get off here. But I was just curious what y'all thought, if Cody Rhodes should remain undefeated going into Mania, or do you think he should have had that one loss and got it out of the way before his Mania match? And that's all.
I don't think Cody should have lost. I don't think you want him losing. I mean, either way, I mean, just you want him to seem like he's the biggest threat on that roster to Roman. I think if Cody lost, even under shenanigans, I think it would weaken him and cause some people to go, they should have put Sammy in there if they're not even protecting Cody. Javier, your thought on the skit with the Bloodline, the Hollywood theme, and then also the last comment about the possible loss for Cody.
I love the skit because it actually played into their characters. So
that was
great about that. It played into essentially the character that Reigns is playing, and it played into the character that Heyman is. So yeah, I thought that was great. I was laughing about that, and the weird thing is, the weird part though was what Solo does at the end, and I was wondering if this was supposed to be kind of like a Batista being dumb kind of moment from the one that Batista did. Or if this was like him, like almost saying, like, you know, because he said, yeah, you're a funny tribal chief, almost felt like he was challenging him. And I'm almost kind of wondering if that was like a planting a seed in our, you know, a further planting of a seed in our heads.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of it. It had been so long since I've seen the movie. I wasn't sure how much that was beat for beat, you know, Solo was playing a specific role in the scene and it wasn't really meant to be read into or not.
Yeah, that's kind of my problem too.
Yeah. Well done. And I mean, it is kind of fun seeing the Bloodline in a different setting than a locker room or a ring. You know, in this, you know, you can kind of imagine them going out to dinner and Reigns holding court and Heyman, you know, with a zinger and a witty comment and, you know, just the different people playing their different role. It not only was a movie reenactment slash spoof, but it sort of was like, oh, this, you know, you can imagine, you know, walking by the window of a fancy restaurant after a WWE event, and there they are, you know, having dinner together. And it just, in that sense, it was kind of cool just seeing them as a group in a different setting. It's like, you know, when you see your teacher at the grocery store when you're a kid, you're like, what? They have lives outside of the place I normally see them? So that was cool, too. All right. Appreciate you kicking the show off, Chris, on our VIP Express first caller of the show. We'll now go to AJ in Virginia. Then we got William in San Diego and Brad from Florida, the next two up also. AJ, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Roth tonight?
Wade, Javier, how are you guys doing?
Good, good. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. So, Wade, I was the on-site correspondent for the Raw is 30 show some time ago, and I remember telling you how cheesy I felt Cody Rhodes is, but, man, I have done a 180 on how I feel about him after seeing his initial promo with Heyman, him supporting Sammy the way he did, and his interactions with Roman have just been next level. So he really carries himself like a true star and someone who's really at par with Roman. So he's really won me over. Now, as Cody's been winning me over, and I've always been a huge, huge Sammy fan, I felt less and less about Sammy because I really think they purposely butchered his character so that fans would start rooting for Cody. So when Javier talked about manipulating the fans, I've been manipulated by Triple H and Vince completely the way they've just pulled the rug from underneath Sammy, I feel. And everything, Wade, that you said about how Sammy should have reacted after the Royal Rumble event, how he should have spoken to the fans, I just can't help but wonder if it was purposely scripted so that Cody would be the more favorable choice. So definitely something to think about. Now, if you ask me,
can I pause you?
Please.
One, if they did that, and I'm not ready to say that I think they necessarily did. But if they did, I don't think that's a bad move. I can understand Sammy fans resenting it, or you know, being a little bummed out. But you know, the goal right now is to have WrestleMania be the match people want to see, and if that means taking the risk of cooling Sammy off a little bit in order to let Cody be in the spotlight. I mean, there is sort of a pragmatism to that strategy if it was done either deliberately or almost like not by accident, but, you know, just by the nature of where their priority shifted, that might happen anyway. So if AJ, hold on a second, because I want to get Javier's thoughts on that and then we'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the question of, And it's hard to think this in storytelling. Sami Zayn's not the guy who gets the girl at the end, but he gets something else that's more important at the end of the day. And that is more the story. That's more the character that Sami plays too. So he's more of what ultimately Sami wants is acceptance. He doesn't care about the championship. That because the reason he joins the Bloodline is because he's looking for acceptance. And basically, by the end of all this, he discovered, you know, crap. I've got my best friend here. And then him winning, you know, so the idea is that the Bloodline, you know, the fans are supposed to be, you know, rooting for them to get Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn to get together, and that becomes what you want Sami to accomplish because you want Sami to be happy. And Sami, you know, Sami being happy is not really him being the championship. It was, you know, you rooted for that because you wanted him to hurt Reigns because Reigns hurt him. But this is, and yeah, I mean, it does feel like it's a little bit like a consolation prize, but it's a big consolation prize to the point where, like, if you were to, you know, I don't know how they're going to set it up, but, you know, this does seem like it should be the main event of the other night of WrestleMania. So, you know, so you have program, you know, 1A and 1B, basically. So I don't think they totally, like, you know, I mean, if you want him to be champion and the top guy of the company, then yeah. But if you want him to be successful and like the character I'm speaking of mainly, you know, him, you know, with his best friend defeating the enemy, eventually you do want to see Sammy get his come up, you know, get his on Roman Reigns, which I think is what, you know, you'll end up seeing in Backlash. By the time we get to Backlash, what's his driving force. So I don't think they like cooled them in that respect, unless you're referring to cooling him down, being like he's not in the championship picture. But that's the second biggest storyline that is going on in WWE right now.
Yeah, I think Javier, do you think they're going to headline night one with that match?
The only reason I don't think they're going to is because they said their thing that the Royal Rumble, the winners of the Royal Rumble are going to be the ones who are going to be main eventing, unless they pull one of those where like, oh, the main event is going to be the first match going, you know, it's going to be the first match or it's going to be the second match or, you know, one of those. Because I know they've done, you know, we have four main events and one at the end of every hour. Unless they pull one of those, I don't think that it'll be the main event in wording, but in spirit it will be. But I may be wrong. They might just, you know, say screw it. This is how this thing going.
They've been very sneaky about not saying what night the matches are on TV. You know, they don't want people picking and choosing what night they watch based on, you know, oh, my favorite matches are on night two, and I don't really care about night one. I think the only.
I do wonder, maybe is that why they might have said that Cena's the first match, going to be the first match to make sure people get in there early if they saw the, you know, slower sales for night one than night two?
Maybe, yeah. Well, Wikipedia's listed that Seth and Logan Paul is on Saturday. The Trish Lita and Becky match is on night one. Lesnar Omos is night one. And Charlotte and Rhea is night one. And we know Austin Theory is. So they've got five matches where the WWE has said what night they're going to be on. But they weren't talking about that on Raw other than Cena Theory, I don't think. I was listening.
And Logan Paul also, because they talked about his birthday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course. But like when they did video packages on the matches, they put the graphic up and it's like, you know, night one, night two. They didn't overtly, and maybe I missed it at times, but they didn't overtly try to push people like, yeah, this is what you can look forward to on night one, and here's what you can look forward to on night two. And there's, you know, a lot more to be decided. Maybe they're, you know, honestly, they might be trying to figure it out based on the match length and formatting. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't call it a sign of disorganization or cramming for a test or anything like that. They just might kind of want to see how they feel about the matches and crowd responses in the last week going into the event and leave themselves a little open to make changes too. Okay, cool. AJ, back to you. I know I kind of cut you off as you're transitioning.
No worries. And wait, I actually wasn't even complaining. The fact that Cody won me over, someone who I thought was super cheesy, I think says a lot about the product, right? So I think we all just want the best product, high-level quality, and we're getting that, right? So I'm thoroughly enjoying all of this. Now, if you ask me who the rightful person is to dethrone Roman, from a storytelling perspective, it's not Sammy and it's not Cody either. It really should be Jay, because this is really his story and we're seeing it from all these different perspectives. And, you know, his story started 3 years ago and they continue to plant seeds about him wanting to be the one to hit Roman with the chair when Sammy did it, him having this internal conflict. So I think they've done a great, great job with Jay's character. And if Roman does beat Cody, which I don't think is likely, I think they're all in with Cody. But if you want to sort of really do justice to this amazing bloodline story, I think Jay should be the guy. I think Roman really should win. And I'd love for The Rock to be the one that potentially influences Jay to trust his instincts and go after Roman. So if that happens, I think it really satisfies me personally as a fan. But even with Cody winning, I'll still enjoy the product very much.
Yeah, Javier, anything you want to respond to there?
Yeah, I just think that the whole bloodline thing, I personally think it might be time to, because you're already like at the you're like really high up there at the top, you know, and they've been really pushing the, and I mean, they even mentioned it on SmackDown, and Sami Zayn in his promo said that, you know, it feels like change is in the air, something along those lines. And that's the thing. So I think we end up seeing like a pause on the bloodline thing to regather and then come back stronger. And then I think the bloodline story goes on for a little bit further. I know they were trying to get The Rock in for this year. I think things would have gone differently if that were the case. I kind of now don't really feel like, you know, I think The Rock, you know, The Rock getting involved now kind of feels like superfluous. Base. I think we passed the point where that story should have been. I think now, there's the, like you said, there's the Jay. There's also the Jimmy situation, because Jimmy also was, he didn't outright call out Roman, but he hasn't seen what Roman is yet. One of the things that I don't think I've been on the shows too much, so I didn't mention it, but I did mention it to you, Wade. I don't know if I mentioned it live, because one thing that I hadn't heard about was the when Sami Zayn talks to Kevin Owens and is trying to win him back. He goes, look, you know, fine, you don't want to do anything more with me. I just know that I love you. That's also replayed mm-hmm. later on Raw when they're having their meeting in the room, and then Roman tells Jay to stay behind and says, you haven't talked, what's going on? And then at the end of that, he says, I love you. And the thing, Roman tells him, Jay, I love you. But there's a difference, because Sami Zayn meant it to Kevin Owens. And I think Jay realized that Roman Reigns is just saying that to keep him, to keep Jay close. So I do agree that Jay is another one who needs to get over on Roman, but I don't think it's going to be for the championship, because Jay, like, what's next for Jay? Jay is not about going after the championship, the character of Jay. And I know this is wrestling, and everybody should be going after the championship. I get that part. But in the type of story that they're telling, his is basically to, he's in an abusive relationship, and what you want to see him is basically tell the dude, hey, F off. That's his closure. That's his mm-hmm. storyline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't need this. You don't need a belt for that. So I think that, that's why I think that you were going to start seeing this, if they're going to push the disillusion now, that's probably what we're going to see in Backlash. Remember, they call it Blacklash for a reason. So in Backlash, it could be Sami Zayn getting his revenge on Roman. I'm expecting that the little bit that Roman's going to do from this point on is going to be people getting revenge on him. Mm-hmm. So they essentially get their wins back, and then, take some time off and then come back. And then he could actually at that point come back as a babyface, depending on what the situation, is. It's fascinating. That's why I'm really excited for this WrestleMania, because it does feel like Sami Zayn said that there's change. And I've heard reports where, they're still kind of running off of the Vince McMahon playbook, sort of, for what was planned for this WrestleMania. Now being run by Triple H, and but then coming this WrestleMania, it's like going to be like all on Triple H's shoulders. So it does feel like this might be like a good time to like set a new stage and see what we go, what develops from here.
Yeah. Yep. All right. AJ, anything else?
Yeah. Just one more item. So I've had this one issue with the WWE product and would just love to get your thoughts on it. And it has to do with calling an audible when it's so compelling to do so, but WWE's position to just sticking to the script, right? So a few real quick examples. Let's not turn Seth heel when he received the biggest pop he did after returning from an injury a few years ago, a pop that I don't think he's matched since then. Letting Sami maybe win against Roman in Montreal for the title, for it to be such an unprecedented event in WWE history. And that's something that would have stayed in the fans' minds forever. Now, I would have been okay if Roman beat him the next week and did a hard reset on his next two-year run. Even when Jay turned on Sami after giving him that hug, the way the fans reacted when Jay first hugged Sami, you just wanted to cherish that moment a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And 10 seconds later, he just gave him that super kick. And the reason I bring this up is because I really feel when WWE sticks to the script, so to speak, you're actually missing out on a great opportunity to really elevate the product even more. And sometimes it's okay to give one to the fans just because the pop in the crowd is unheard of. And that should, I wish, compel them to make those decisions. Now, AEW, I feel, probably does it too much, right? They cater too much to the fans, where I don't love the product as much, But I feel WWE is on the other extreme where they don't do it at all, and they really take their fans for granted. So I just wanted to leave you guys with that. Would love to get your thoughts on it. And thanks for having me, Wade and Javier. I really appreciate it.
Great, AJ. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Great comments. Great questions. You know, they call an audible in the sense that Sami Zayn wasn't supposed to be still in this Bloodline storyline. You know, that's something that caught fire and got expanded. So I'll give them credit for that. I think I was, you know, in Newark in that building for Seth coming his comeback with Travis Bryant, and it's still the biggest pop that I can recall in a long time that I for an arena that I was in for a wrestling event, and it was very deflating. And so the other examples he gives, you know, the Jay Sammy hug, and then Sammy in Montreal. I mean, they are good examples. It is it'd be an interesting, you know, exercise to play out how much that reshuffles so many things if they were to have done either, you know, either of those two more recent examples. Javier, do you have any, based on now where we are, I mean, we're pretty much at WrestleMania here. Do you look at those two scenarios as potential mistakes because there was some magic in a bottle? I don't know if that works, but you know, those were magical moments and they decided to stay the course and not kind of swerve into the joy of the fans as AJ described.
No, because I think there's still more left to tell the story. The Jey Uso thing, the hug, that wasn't a swerve. Because you know, some people might think that, you know, that might be a thought. It's like, oh, you know, he hugged him and then super kicked him. That hug from Jey, it's my, you know, from my perspective. That was Jey being legitimate. You know, that because he actually cared for Sammy, but he had to choose the Bloodline. So you can see that moment at, when he hugs Sammy, it's like, you know, you're about to take out Old Yeller and this is the last hug you're going to give, you know, Old Yeller before you, you know, take him out to the back. That's what that moment was for Jey. And there was a promo, I think the promo was after that, where Jey kind of both played you know, being honest and being open and blasting the audience at the same time, which was essentially him going from, because, you know, again, Jey has been an important part of the storyline, that he, you know, this started with Roman Reigns forcing him to get into line, and this caused him to basically harden, you know, harden himself and put out a demeanor, which is, you know, I'm tough. And if you notice, he was usually the person to start barking in a lot of cases, because he's showing, you know, that, hey, look, I'm a good dog, you know, to Roman Reigns. You know, so, but he lowers that guard with his relationship with Sammy, but then he has to get that guard again. Eventually, it's going to, you're going to see that Jey again. Thing is that for now, because we're going to get to WrestleMania, and, you know, for now, you know, he has to harden himself up, be the bad guy for this thing, and he's playing the role. Like, the character of Jey is playing the role of having to be a bad guy, you know, but then, like, after they lose, then what was this all for? As they start seeing Roman lose and start losing control of the Bloodline, they'll start seeing things for how they really are, and then that's when you're going to start seeing the people around Roman start leaving him. As you know, I'm expecting Roman to try to, you know, tighten the leash, but it's going to slip through his fingers. So you'll end up seeing, like, you know, that's when you're going to see Jey finally really break out. Maybe, you know, probably with his brother. Solo Sikoa turn his back on Roman, you know, so Roman's like, oh, Solo, you're still here. And then Solo just turns his back, that sort of thing, leaving Roman Reigns. Cause that ultimately, like, the character Roman Reigns is playing is essentially the character who's going to alienate everyone around him and dies alone in the bed. That's going to be his final chapter as a heel. Yeah. So whether this happens around, you know, in the next, like, short period, like, you know, Backlash and whatever, you know, around that period, or if it's something you're going to see, you know, play off a little bit later. But I think ultimately that's the direction of the Bloodline split, the way they're going to do it. And then that's when you're going to see, you know, Jey and Sammy, you know, re-embrace it after that point. And that's the thing. This is going to be like a year down the road, and you're going to be like, oh, crap, they finally got, you know, they finally put everything together and we have this moment between the two of them. I think this is when, you know, when people talk about long-term booking, I think this is what, you know, this is what you want to see from long-term booking.
I get what AJ's saying, and yeah. In some ways it was sort of a no-lose situation because, I mean, you have that right there ready for this to be a super special moment. But, yeah, they were committed to long-term booking, and the stories, it's not like they're petering out. And I do not blame them for not veering in the new direction, you know, just because something would be a magical moment. You know, could they have made Sammy against Roman work with Sammy as champion and Roman challenging him? Of course. You know, imagine if they did that. If Cody got hurt, if he tore his tricep or something, I mean, you know, they absolutely could have made that work, and it would have been a real special main event, and then they'd have to reshuffle as far as what they do with the Usos. And so, yeah, I mean, they could have done that. I mean, the Jay thing is a little more problematic, but I guess, you know, you can do both and end up with Jay with KO, you know, as a partner against Jimmy and Sammy or Solo or something along those lines. So there were different options there. All right. We'll go to Brad in Florida next, and then I see our on-site correspondent Brian is waiting for us. So he'll be up in just a couple minutes here. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw?
Hey, guys. So I'll be quick because I know you have the on-site correspondent. But, you know, do you guys think that this outcome of Cody Roman is set in stone? Or do you think that they already know what they're doing? Because the way I'm reading into it with Paul Heyman, and especially that long promo and all this not ready stuff that keeps coming up, which seems to come out of the thin blue. I mean, it just comes out of the air. Like, it just doesn't seem to come from anywhere in particular. I wonder if they are setting it up for Cody to have a little bit more adversity, and maybe that even is planned back to Cody coming in at number 30 in the Royal Rumble and how it all connects for the last 3 months, because I'm just not seeing that adversity for Cody. Yes, he had to face Solo tonight. That was definitely a test for sure. But I just don't think they're well served by having this all end for the entire bloodline at Mania. I'm 99.9% sure that Sammy and Kevin take down the Usos. So Roman losing as well, and the bloodline basically being not a high-level thing anymore and not a group with any titles, I just don't think right now is the time. I think SummerSlam could be the time. I just don't see – I mean, do you guys think in your professional opinions that this is set in stone and this is the way that they're going with Cody winning? And as much as I like him and I think he's terrific, I just don't think the time is right now. Not right now, at least.
You know, I hesitate to take a strong stand on what the right direction is without having presented in front of me, which I don't want, what the follow-up plans are. Because, you know, if just because our imagination says, oh, it'd be better if this happens instead of that, that doesn't mean that that wouldn't be derailing something that's going to be great, that they have long thought about, meticulously planned, and it's all going to work out. I'll say this. I can imagine scenarios where Cody loses and WWE TV is compelling and a lot is built around the bloodline and Cody has this other feud to go with. Somebody on Twitter mentioned, he said, I'm calling it right now, Randy Orton costs Cody the match against Roman. And then you have a Cody Orton feud set up and the bloodline can move on to whatever, a rematch with Sammy. I mean, And I throw that out there as an example of, yeah, I mean, they might have some really great ideas that haven't even crossed their mind, or they did, but we didn't take them seriously, where if Roman wins and Cody has to go off on something else and then work his way back up to try to unseat Roman, and they think the timing works out better because they got great stuff planned for Roman and Cody in that case, I'm not going to prejudge and say it's wrong, but is there – things are going well for Cody. They're in L.A. Cody wants to be a workhorse. He's been waiting for this moment. His whole life has been building to this moment. The setting is special. If they have a really good story to tell with about the bloodline, with Roman losing and the ramifications of that, or just scheduling issues with Roman where they're like, yeah, well, you know, we might stick with Roman, but he's got XYZ going on. So let's, you know, we're going to go with this. I'm not trying to be wishy-washy on this. I really am not. I'm trying to say – I don't know enough to say what the right direction is without knowing where they're actually going and seeing it play out. And two, I actually think it's a no-lose situation. I really think there are – I can imagine some good scenarios regardless of the finish at Mania. And that's not always the case. Sometimes I think there's a pretty obvious right thing to do, but I think you can make a case. Cody should win and have that moment, and they just to elevate him to be the guy who unseated Roman in almost a – it won't be like, you know, Lesnar beating Undertaker, because people didn't really see that coming and people sort of see this coming. But it's a big moment, and I don't know that you can recreate it if you try it again in 4 or 8 or 12 months. Javier, your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Without knowing what happens next, it's kind of hard to see what's going on. But I'm looking from like what they've done so far with Cody and the fact that how hard they pushed you know, because I mean, again, I keep going back to Drew McIntyre because that traumatized me. the stuff that's done with him. You know, he was, you know, like during the pandemic, I remember we talked about it as like, you know, man, it's such a shame because he was like during that time he was definitely like a cut above. They were really pushing him and protecting him, unlike they had done with a lot of people, which is why. You know, but it was hard to tell because you know, and by the pandemic, I'm talking about the empty arena era. You know, and then like it felt like that's why so many people in the Cardiff show were pushing for like, you know, Drew needs to be the one. I'm kind of like there with Cody because of what, you know, well, and then with McIntyre losing, then like he's kind of petered out after that. Yeah, he's involved in this triple threat match, but you know, he's not the same on the same level. I think they've got too much invested in Cody because if Cody loses, it's going to be a similar situation. Unless, like you mentioned, Wade, and that's what I was referring to. That unless like there's a major angle, like you know, Randy Orton coming back, and it's got to be more than Randy Orton, but something like along those lines. You know, the Fiend, not the Fiend, but you know, Bray Wyatt and Uncle Howdy and all his skeletal group, you know, shows up and messes everything up. Dark Order kind of ending, something crazy like that. Would be one of the ways to protect Cody, or you know, like I said, Cody, you know, is so destroyed by this moment of you know, I got to finish the story. Oh, you didn't? Ah, man! And then completely changes the character. And that's the thing. I don't think they're really. That's why I really do feel like it's a good moment. Plus, this feels like it's the end of an act for the Bloodline. Does it mean that the Bloodline needs to completely go away and like be done forever? But it feels like it's like at, you know, act one, which was Roman Reigns holding this title for all this time. And that being what held the group together, give them a little time. And then you start act two with them.
Yeah. And they've given enough hints they've planted, you know, a number of seeds for post-Mania. I think most of those seeds point towards Cody winning and Roman losing his confidence and being rattled. But I can imagine a scenario where Roman wins and those seeds that were planted work in a different way moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brett, back to you.
Yeah. On the Goodfellas thing, that thing with Solo at the end was really strange. I mean, where he's like, you're a funny tribal chief, whatever, and looking at him all seriously. That almost made me think, you know, you might have a Solo Roman feud coming up at some point in the future or something. That was that, because that's not part of the original Goodfellas scene at all. There's no, you know, whatever. That was just a weird throw in that made no sense. And it wasn't particularly humorous or. It just was clearly put there for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah, you could tell it wasn't played for laughs. That, which is what was really weird. It felt like it took a serious. It took a serious note there, which was fascinating. If this is actually leading to something, to be honest.
Yeah. If that type of skit is what leads to a major chapter in the Bloodline storyline, that's wow. You can't fast forward past those things because you'll miss a clue to something big happening later.
Yeah, and I'll let you get to the correspondent, but I guess my last point is after Mania, you know, Javier had brought up something about Paul Heyman potentially, you know, maybe a Gunther thing or something like that. I could really see Paul Heyman trying to latch on to Cody Rhodes after Mania and trying to, you know, oh, Cody, you know I always loved you. You know I always loved your father. I know your father. You know, I could see him just trying to go wherever the championship is and kind of weasel his way in until, you know, maybe Roman makes a comeback. Maybe Roman is gone for 2-3 months. I mean, I just can't see him managing Gunther. I think the cultural dynamic is too different. you know, between the two of them. But I do think you might see him trying to latch on to Cody. I really can't imagine what else he would do. Yeah, I'll let you get to that correspondent. But, you know, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. All right. Brian. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Javier.
Well, the thing where I'm talking about Heyman and Gunther, I'd be fascinated to see that for that particular reason, that because the role that he played with Brock Lesnar was different from the role that he's playing with Heyman. So I can see him take like a third personality and be more like maybe more like a business partner. Like, hey, look, I got this problem with Cody Rhodes. I want you to be the one to take him out. You know, that kind of thing. So it could be a different kind of relationship. Doesn't necessarily need to be the same relationship that he has with either Roman or Brock Lesnar.
All right. All right, so we've got Brian from Phoenix. I have a feeling he's a longtime VIP member. Brian, welcome to the show. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Wade, how are you? And hey, Javier, I'm sorry about that, Wade. Something weird really happened with the phone. Anyway, I'll go and ask whatever questions you two gentlemen have.
How would you rank the enthusiasm of the crowd tonight, given how heavy it was on video packages? And hype for WrestleMania. I'm curious if that seemed noticeable to you, that for a live experience, there was a lot of turning your head to look at the big screen.
So, you know, to me, Wave, again, Javier, I'm not sure if we ever talked or not, but it's good to talk to you. Like you always say, it's interesting about what happens when the videos packages go on. You know, like Gunther, for example, he stayed in the ring for a pretty long time and, like, stood in the ring, you know, not just sat down or any place. And then Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci were walking around the ring as well. But, you know, to me, it didn't take too much away from the card at all as far as the video package was concerned, to be honest, or from the crowd, I should say. And I should say this really quick, too, Wade, that there were this was probably the fullest I've seen the Prince Center Arena since I've lived here in Phoenix, and it's been 23 years since I've lived here. The hard camera, where the hard camera was, there was maybe four or five seat rows that were off, where I've been here before, where like the entire slide was tarped off. And sorry about the background sound too. Wait, keep going. Not me myself.
Oh, sure. Javier, you can respond to that or throw a question to Brian.
Well, I was just wondering because there was an obvious lull during the women tag team match. With the crowd, were there any other lulls, pronounced lulls, outside obviously maybe when people watching, you know, the video streams, but during any matches or during any promos or anything, were there any parts where the crowd seemed checked out? Because it felt like the crowd was pretty much like, you know, in on everything.
Yeah, Javier. Yeah, the women's tag team match, it was pretty silent. But for the most part, the rest of the night, the crowd was either energetic or like super energetic. Dominic Mysterio, as you probably know, Javier and Wade, I'm going to close to say nuclear heat that he got, you know, during the time he was in the ring.
You faded out a little bit there, Brian. But the heat for Dominic really came through. We haven't talked much about that yet, Javier, the Ray Dominic thing. I'm sure we'll get to it. But the crowd heat for Dominic in every city is so massive. And it's, I mean, what a... Ray's got to be proud, you know, setting aside the storyline. And Dominic just has to be thinking, how did this happen? You know, like, how did I end up in this spot? This is great. He's just turned out to be so viable. Brian, what kind of, overall presence did you sense as a fan for Gunther compared to all your years of watching wrestling, all your years of going to live wrestling? Did he come across as, this is a big star, or is it kind of next level down? Like, yeah, he's kind of the flavor of the season, like Sheamus was, you know, a dozen years ago, and Braun Strowman was, you know, half a dozen years ago. Is it more like that, or does this feel like something bigger when you watch him come to the ring and you feel the vibe in the building for him?
Wow, wait, that's a really good question. And I'd have to really give it a little bit more deeper thought. You know, if I say say I don't want to downgrade and say flavor of the month because that's kind of I don't want to really downgrade it. But I mean, it's just you know sometimes when you sometimes when just things come together, they just come together. So it's hard for me to answer your question honestly right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Talk about the Cody Rhodes pop compared to any other babyface on the show. Ray, Seth, Becky, you know, where did Cody rank and what did you think of, you know, kind of a similar question with Gunther, just like, did he seem like he was the center of everyone's attention and held their attention when he was out there coming to the ring and wrestling?
So I might say that Cody just edged out both Seth and Becky, probably just barely, but I think it was more, you know, after you know, 3 hours separation between Becky and Cody, it's kind of it's a little harder to judge. And then plus Becky had, you know, Lita and Trish with her. So that's maybe a little extra oomph there for those three ladies. But, you know, Cody, he did command, you know, the ring. And then after Raw went off the air, I'm assuming you're talking about the airway, is that Cody did stay around for a while. Of course, he addressed the fans saying, hey, thanks a lot, Phoenix. He mentioned the first time he had the first WrestleMania he was in was actually the one in Phoenix. I went to that one in 2010, hard to believe. And he talked about that a little bit, about how the next time he comes back to Phoenix, he's got to be the undisputed WWE heavyweight champion. So, you know, he was the alpha male while he was out there. So, you know, between himself and Becky, Peyton, and Trish, and then also Seth, I would, you know, and Ray got a huge pop, too, and, you know, did it, I mean, Ray has always been really popular here in Phoenix, but, you know, of course, Dominic Parr's going to make it a little bit more hotter. So I would say, you know, Cody was number one. I'll go out there, Wade, and I'm going to say that.
Interesting, yeah. Javier, anything you want to ask Brian?
Yeah, the crowd after the almost weigh-in with Brock Lesnar, it kind of felt like the crowd really wanted Lesnar to get back in there because I think they started chanting Suplex City. But then it almost feel like they kind of cut the feet of what they were saying when it looked like Brock Lesnar wasn't going to continue going after almost. How was the crowd reaction during that?
So, Javier, I thought the crowd was pretty muted during the whole almost Brock Lesnar way in, way out interaction. I'm not sure whatever you want to call it. Kind of knew that Brock wasn't going to come back in the ring. We just kind of just, you know, okay, that's just what it's going to be. That's just what it's going to be. And we'll have to see what happens at WrestleMania. So I think that's where the crowd took it as. I mean, Brock, did get a nice, decent, you know, I think it's a good part of the pop, but that's kind of what it was based on, you know, what we talked about with Cody and Seth and Becky and Trish. So, yeah, you know, we were excited to see him. Obviously, when his music hit, all the people around me stood up, and they were energetic. But, like, you know, we'll see what happens. And by the way, I would like to say this, too, as well. And I know you two saw it, and maybe one sure didn't miss it or not. I thought that they cut the almost interaction from not last week, but week before last, when almost threw Brock almost tried to see Brock once again over the ring, but they cut it where they showed him where almost, you know, grabbed his head and threw him towards the ropes, and the next thing you know, they showed Brock outside the ring. So I'm not sure if you saw that actually on TV.
Hey, Brian, I'm picking up mostly on what you're saying, but your connection is your connection is really rough, almost not at a level that it needs, you know, it's below a level it kind of needs to be. Are you able to shift to a new position, or should we just wrap up at this point?
Yeah, great. Let's wrap up. It's probably just the way I'm writing. I'm riding home right now. So I'll go ahead and I don't want
yeah.
to show. So I'll go ahead and let you go. Our 32-year PW20 VIP subscriber, senior VIP subscriber, if you're listening to me right now, you can understand what I'm saying. Give Waves a try. Give the Pro Wrestling Torch a try. Javier's good talking to you. Waves good talking to you. Have a really good night, both of you. Sorry about crashing the show, Wade. Thank you.
No, yeah, no problem. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Yeah, just it was not great, and then it got worse, the connection. But I was able to pick on most everything until the very end there, Javier. Anything that you want to react to in terms of what Brian said?
No, sir.
Yeah. All right, cool. So as promised, let's get to William in San Diego. He's been on hold a while here. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Yeah, thanks guys for taking my call. I want to talk about the opening segment. You know, I kind of been vocal that I've been disappointing about that six-woman tag match at WrestleMania with Becky and Bayley. I thought at least tonight they tried something. You know, they tried to add a little more story to it. And that being, I think they're playing into the whole speculation of people that, you know, Io Shirai and Dakota Kai are going to turn on Bayley. And, you know, Becky was kind of throwing fire at that, or throwing, you know, fuel at that fire, trying to light it up with, you know, saying that ever since they teamed up with Bayley, they've kind of just been a failure, you know, listing some of their accomplishments before it, and kind of playing into that notion that a lot of people have had, which is that damage control just hasn't, you know, worked out in the main roster. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think of that opening Miss TV segment and the promos and everything?
Yeah, Javier, I'll throw to you first on that. What do you think is kind of their last pitch to make to hook people to care about that match?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually what I picked up on it, too. It kind of felt, it did feel to me like a little bit fourth wall breaky there. You know, particularly she basically, you know, Becky, you know, says, you know, Io was like one of the best champions on NXT, and look at where she is now. And Bayley, you just drag everyone around you down. Kind of felt a bit stiff. But yeah, I mean, I think that does definitely feel like maybe it might be, if not attack and Bayley, but at the very least turn, you know, they'll turn their back on her. My brother did text me during that match, and he thought that the match, the way it went, that it felt like it might have been testing the waters to see how Io would fare, you know, solo kind of thing. So. It does kind of feel like that. I don't think the promo really made me more interested in the match anyway. I think this might be the most disappointing build in terms of the star power involved, because you got Becky, Bayley, and two legacy stars as your top people there. So, you know, were you? It's and this wouldn't be like you know, probably wouldn't even be like top half of the matches I'm most interested in, which I think it's a shame. And I don't think really the that promo really did, you know, much more to elevate that, which is you know, it's a shame.
But so why doesn't your brother email us anymore?
He has a child.
Okay, boy, it's time to text you. I mean, should I be his priority?
I mean. He actually, I texted him back on something that had happened. He's like, oh, I felt behind because I had to change diapers.
Oh, gotcha. I know what that's like. And, man, it's a miracle. Like, I'm able to keep doing what I'm doing with a seven-month-old puppy, too. Although, some ways, that's even – in some ways, it's worse. But in other ways, not in terms of the distraction and the demands. All right, let's see. William, I don't have a lot to say about it. I mean, I think you guys covered it. I think they're planting some seeds there. I mean, Bayley leaned hard into being a heel, calling the fans idiots. I think they know that they have a match that isn't, you know, huge. But, you know, I mean, Trish and Lita are big names, and Becky's a big name from this era, and Bayley's a big name. So, I mean, I'm fine with it being a match on the show. And the build's been, you know, okay enough. I don't think every build has to be as tremendous as you know, a few key main events. So the fact that they gave them considerable time at the top of the show means they aren't waving the white flag. And I think they are either testing some things or planting some seeds or just want, you know, wanting to let people know there's some things in play here. So it's worth not just writing this off completely. William, back to you.
Yeah, I think what makes it a little extra disappointing for me is that, you know, and it's been mentioned a bunch of times in this show, so I don't want to, you know, talk a whole bunch about it, but I just that I don't think there's, like, any one women's program going into WrestleMania that's, like, really super exciting. So when you have all these big names with Becky, Lita, Trish, Bayley, and two, you know, up-and-coming hopeful stars with Io and the Dakota Kai, you know, you kind of want a little bit more for it, but – Yeah, I had other topics. I agree with one of your points that you made early in the show, in that they really tried a lot of different things to build to a lot of the different programs for WrestleMania. And I really like what they did with the Balor promo. I thought it would look visually interesting, just the way they shot it, with, you know, with the contrast, the lighting. It just looked more, I don't know, high value, more big league, I guess, for cinematic, for like a better term. Especially in contrast to that, you know, the one we had last week with Edge, where he was like sitting in a room with a bunch of candles, and it seemed like the ISO was turned all the way up, and the film looked all kind of grainy, and kind of the quality wasn't all that good. But yeah, this one with Balor, I don't have much to say about the content of the promo itself, like what he was saying, but just the look of it. I thought just by the look of it itself, it looked really good, and it made the match feel a little more special. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Javier, Ed, you know, Becky said, I thought we'd have been down at War Games, and here we are. I think a lot of people think that about Edge Balor. Have they done a decent job at least, making this match feel WrestleMania worthy? Hell in a Cell, Demon, the promos, the overall presentation. Have they covered enough bases where this doesn't feel like you almost resent that they're using Balor and Edge against each other yet again?
Yeah, man, this is can I say both?
I mean, if you elaborate.
Well, because I mean, I do want to see this finally play off, and obviously they were building up to this, but it just felt that they took so many detours and took forever to get here. It's kind of the problem. So yeah, I'm pulled in both directions. You know, it's like, I want to be more excited for the Demon showing up. You know, I want to be more excited for Brood Edge, which is, I'm assuming, what they're going to do coming out. What's Christian's contract status? You know, maybe he was buried in AEW and appears, you know, during this match. Reunion of the Brood sort of thing. That'd be awesome. You know, so there's potential here. I think ultimately for Hell in the Cell, it should be fun. I think it should be a fun, interesting match, but like, I just wanted to get it over with also. So,
yeah,
I'm really all over the place on this one, Wade.
And that's fair. I mean, that's fair. You can have mixed feelings and contradictory thoughts. It's going to be in that stadium a spectacle. You know, I mean, when Finn Balor was in NXT, you know, just doing his regular ring entrance, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be so cool in major arenas when he gets called up. And the Demon is like being at a WrestleMania stadium show. That's going to be really cool. And they're going to be in the Hell in a Cell. I'm okay with this. I am okay with it. I wouldn't say I'm enthusiastic about it, but between Hell in a Cell and the Demon and just, you know, having a feud that doesn't feel manufactured just for WrestleMania, the worst, you know, framing of it is it's extended in order to accommodate WrestleMania, but I'll take that over just something that feels like there's no backstory. And yeah, as William said and noted that I had said earlier, they use a variety of approaches and techniques and settings to promote their matches, and Edge and Balor kind of had, you know, a particular style of build on the last couple episodes, with just them and the camera and a little bit of special effects. And so, you know, it's distinct, and I do like that. I don't think it would make sense to do it all the time. I think it makes sense to keep things a little more conventional otherwise, but for WrestleMania, it makes the card and some of the individual matches feel more special. So I think they've pulled it off well enough.
And I think another thing that kind of holds it back a little bit for me is that the Judgment Day, the hottest story there going on is what Dominic is doing, followed by Ripley is doing. And so this is when you're putting it in the Judgment Day. This seems like the third most important storyline of the Judgment Day, and it's the Hell in a Cell match against Edge, who's a legacy star. You know, that's why I'm so like ambivalent about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is, you've stated facts, Javier. You stated facts. All right, William, back to you. Anything else you want to add?
So I know a lot of people, you know, there's been like a lot of argument, like
is Cody the right person to take the belt from Roman? Should it have been Sami Zayn at WrestleMania and that kind of stuff? But I'm really enjoying the stuff he's doing with Kevin Owens right now. And I thought, you know, this is more of a SmackDown thing, but I thought the stuff they did at SmackDown with the Kevin Owens show was really endearing, with the unveiling of the new shirt and everything. And it to me, it really brings me back to what I originally liked about his stuff with the Bloodline, which is, you know, that bond he shared with, you know, Jimmy and Jay and Roman a little bit. And that's seemingly that kind of friendship that they had, and the silliness, the Uzi stuff, calling them my dog, and all the zany stuff, no pun intended, with Sammy. And I don't, you know, a lot of people, I think, I know they wish Sammy would have been the one to dethrone Roman Reigns, but I'm really sold on this possible tag team run that we're going to have with Kevin and KO. I think Sammy plays a lot better when he has someone to play off of, like a Kevin Owens or a Bloodline in the past. And I don't know how long they could have kept Sammy as a top solo act, you know, carrying the main event. So, yeah, what do you guys think about that?
Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I was against I'm not for Sami Zayn as he is right now winning the title at that moment, because it's like, you know, it's like the dog catches the car. Now what?
Right.
You know, so because that you know, his goal is not the title. His goal is to take down Roman Reigns a peg. So, yeah, I mean, if they decide to put, you know, if they're happy with his performance and they decide to, you know, give him a push to that level, you could do that now and build it where he's like, hey, I got a taste of this moment. I want more of this. Now I want the championship, and reframe the character, give him a new mission statement. And then, you know, that's when you could really like get into it, because, you know, the Cody's mission statement is to win the title. That wasn't really Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's mission, and he even says this, he even said it when he was going up against them, that his mission statement is to take down the Bloodline, and the first step of doing that is taking the title away from Roman Reigns. That is, yeah. he didn't want the title for glory, he didn't want it for anything. He wanted it so that it could damage Roman Reigns. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. William, anything else you want to close with?
Yeah, one last topic. What do you guys think about Bobby Lashley and DeAndre? Should they just, you know, have kept them off of WrestleMania? I think at some point you kind of get a little too big for being in DeAndre. And I think, yeah, it kind of brings the star, or at least the way I see Bobby Lashley down a little bit. It kind of feels beneath him for me. And also, just real quick, what do you guys think about, you know, them not even mentioning the fact that the whole Bray and Lashley thing is off? I mean, I get that Bray is probably going through some private personal stuff, and I completely understand that. And, you know, that obviously they should respect that privacy, that personal stuff of this. But should they at least, you know, try to explain storyline-wise what happened? Yeah, that's all I have. Thank you guys for taking the call.
Thanks, William. Good point to end on your call there. Yeah, it's weird, you know? I mean, to just have something that people were so excited about and invested in, not everybody, Javier, but many were. And to, I mean, can you imagine if they were promoting Bray against Lesnar and this happened, and then Lesnar's in the Battle Royal? I mean, that would accentuate the point William's making when it comes to Lashley. I mean, I don't think they have an obligation to draw attention to the fact that Bray isn't there, but I also don't rule out that they could have. You know, I mean, if they think he's going to come back, they, you know, there could have been a passing comment of, you know, what happened to Bray Wyatt? And they could turn that into a thing. Now, maybe that puts more pressure on him than they want, or they don't know the timeline, they don't know for sure, you know, and everything I hear makes it sound like this is a private matter. You know, that's led to this just sort of stopping. But, I mean, I know some things about his last, you know, the end of his last stint. And so I say this in the context of I understand why they might just be staying away from it completely and kind of waiting to see how things play out. But Javier, how are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I don't think they had gotten so far into it that you really needed to they were just teasing it at that point with the Muscle Man Dance thing and the one encounter with Uncle Howdy. So, yeah, I mean, and I agree that it's a little bit like normally I would say it's a little bit beneath Lashley, but we're going to get Lashley standing across the ring from Bronson Reed. And if that doesn't get your imagination going.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because that's what I like about the Royal Rumbles and Battle Royals is you get moments like that, and that is a moment I want to see. So,
yeah, that's going to be cool. It does, you know. I thought Bronson Reed was the likely winner for all kinds of reasons, and you know, I think he still is. But if he eliminates Lashley, that does set up a follow up between them too for Backlash or otherwise. All right, let's go to the other thing
they could do they could be doing if they're ready to restart the Wyatt thing. It makes no sense that, you know, a week, you know, like 5 days before WrestleMania doing it, Lashley could lose the thing because of, you know, something spooky happening, and then they can pick it up from there if they're ready to come back. It's just it's not going to play off at WrestleMania. So
yeah, yep. All right, mailbag time. Matt in South Carolina says, I know these go-home shows are never more than a long advertisement for the pay-per-view or PLE, and tonight's show was no different. But one thing I want to bring up that I don't think gets talked about enough, the presentation of the show. The production is amazing. The look, each vignette, each interview, the transition from each segment, all of it is just top level. And it is. If that's not your thing, you know, it doesn't matter to you. But I appreciate a lot of what they did on this show to keep things interesting for what could have come across as, you know, a long infomercial with a you know, sort of throwaway filler match in between here and there. And yeah, I think they did a really nice job. I love the, you know, mini documentary sound bites talking about, you know, Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. And like I said, the empty arena interview with Austin Theory and the close up promos with special effects from Edge last week and Balor this week, backstage KO and Sammy just hanging out as buds, leading to a more traditional fired up babyface promo. They just, you know, and heck, the you know, the Hollywood skit with a bloodline. They did a lot of different things to promote the show. And oh, in the Andre Battle Royal thing, you know, creatively having wrestlers reacting to their names being on the list, even though there was a graphic last Friday that showed all their names on SmackDown. You know, they should watch that show, and they wouldn't have been as surprised. But I'm with Matt on that. Javier, anything you want to add to it? I know we kind of covered that earlier.
Yeah, I mean overall, yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, it was definitely a video package and replay, you know, happy. But as you know, you are trying to promote WrestleMania, and this is like, you know, hey, this is, let's get our ducks in a row. This is what you got. You know, we're there.
Yeah. All right, Jake in New Zealand says, "Hi, Wade. I thought WWE did a good job on what is always a chaotic final Raw before Mania. Often it feels like they try to cram 10 pounds of crap into a 5-pound bag, but this year felt better. It is now clear that Sammy and KO versus Usos must close night one, right? I know there's chatter or Charlotte versus Rhea, but surely the only argument for that match closing night one is the gender-based one, which doesn't fly with me this year. There have been years where the women deserve to close nights and shows in recent memory, but I don't feel this WrestleMania is one of them. What do you say?" Yeah, I do not envy that call, because if they're going to have KO and Sammy win, that's a great way to end night one. And the Bloodline storyline has been so much more prominent and dominant in what's gone on in the past year in WWE than Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. And if I'm Charlotte and Rhea and I'm booked to go last, I don't know that I want to be anywhere near the Usos, Sammy, and KO. Go ahead, Javier. Talk about this.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier They could, like I said, they could pull the trick of like the, you know, a main event at the end of every hour. So, and then, you know, just play it off that way. But I do think that the two top stories are the two Bloodline stories.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Brian H. says, Wade, a legit question. Is it crazy that I think the storyline featuring Rey and Dominic is better than the Bloodline storyline? Javier?
Not crazy. If you prefer like more telenovela kind of storyline. So, I have it up there like really close. I do have it as the third. That's what to me is the third story, most important story. And like, particularly the last couple of weeks elevated a lot. So, it's those top three, but, if you prefer one over the other, then yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I don't think it's crazy to think that. I disagree. But yeah, I don't think it's crazy. I think the Bloodline's been better. But Rey and Dominic has been really good, and it feels like a major storyline. I think this WrestleMania, when people say what do we remember about it, Rey and Dominic's going to be one of the, you know, a lot of matches over the course of two nights. It's got a chance to be second, third, fourth, fifth. You know, and one, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth on like 80-90% of ballots if fans were to fill it out, you know, a year or two from now. And it's Dominic being in a match that, you know, is going to, a lot of people are going to see as the second or third most memorable part of WrestleMania. It's pretty amazing. You know, you've got a Hell in a Cell match. You got Lita and Trish coming back. You got everything going on with the Bloodline. You've got the women's title matches. I mean, to say that it is going to leapfrog those. Heck, Sheamus and Drew against Gunther. I mean, what an IC title reign Gunther's had so far. And what a banger that is set up to be. But yeah, I mean, the story told here has been elaborate. What did you think of the chapter tonight, Javier?
I liked it a lot. Mainly, what really elevated it for me, because this one like basically had been like boiling, and then all of a sudden like, you know, shot out a cannon as a SmackDown, you know, the SmackDown moment where he finally hits his son. And then this one, when he starts going off into like, oh, yeah, I can't believe you hit your son. I'm like, you're such a, you know, oh, man, I hate you so much.
Exactly. Totally.
I'll talk about the actual promo that he did in Spanish in a minute. But
yeah,
what tied it to me at the end was when he says that I'm coming after your leg. I'm coming after the Mysterio name. And that made it like it went from being kind of like I said, like a novella, you know, soap opera-ish kind of thing of like, you know, a little bit bigger than life and, you know, kind of thing. And then he made it about legacy, which is an important thing in lucha culture. And like, I'm coming after the name. I'm going to make this name mine. That to me, from a wrestling standpoint, all of a sudden stopped being about like the drama's still there. The family drama's still there, but hey, this is my legacy and I'm taking it from, you know, I'm taking the torch from you, Dad. I thought that was an important thing at the end. So I really, you know, that kind of moved it into a more serious thing for me. What he had said, and this is why I was joking that, like, it seems like he has some unresolved family issues because he buried his sister.
Yeah.
He said, okay, what he said here has two meanings. I'll give you both of them. They're kind of like they both work. My mother and my sister never could – stand me, or the other thing he, you know, you could interpret it as my mother and my sister never supported me. So they couldn't stand me, or they never supported me. They both work. They always chose my father's side, and my sister is worthless, which is why nothing was ever expected from her, because I stand taller and gutsier than my father. My whole family is jealous of me. I like him. Yeah. Okay. That was actually my opinion. Just already. Oh. I was like, wow, that was like my sister's worthless. And I'm like, that wasn't, you know, and this is one of those where he translates it later.
Yeah.
So I'm like, man, is there something going on in that family I'm not aware of? Cause that's
amazing. Yeah. That's heavy.
You know, and in Spanish too, you know, Spanish is like, And his delivery was also like passionate, like to a point where like he's, I mean, I don't think he's that good of an actor, and
yeah,
he must be. He's really. That's why I joked earlier in the show that it felt like I'm worried about he might be working through some stuff.
Well, I always thought he had it in him, Javier. I always thought it, punk ass kid that we want to see get beat up. The heat for that match is going to be just insane. I mean, that it just – it's going to show that in 2023 you can have a heel fans hate and a babyface fans love. And when you tell a story and if it, you know, blurs the line with reality in a way that enhances a story, I'm for it. I'm never for going to reality when there's a better fictional story to tell that if you tell it well, will work better. But, you know, and I think some people are like, no, anytime you can inject reality into something, do that instead of something better. And I'm like, no, that's really dumb. This is a blend, you know, where you're kind of left wondering a little bit as you have been. And I think for good reason. This is going to be old school heat. You can drop this into 1978 or 1981 in any number of territories and imagine the crowds then and how they'd react to something like this. And the crowds in 2023, all these internet reading, podcast listening, you know, insider, smart, ardent fans, they're going to be wrapped up and not care about anything because hasn't been meta stuff. There hasn't been, you know, references to stuff that breaks a fourth wall or any of the nonsense Cena did and, you know, stuff that we see in so many other places. This is just tell a story with a straight face all the way through with a villain and a sympathetic baby face who fans love and are sympathetic towards. And it's just going to be magical in that building. And I hope they, you know, yes, there's a family dynamic here you can't always create. And Rey is a very special baby face and Dominik has really stepped up as a heel. All that said, this is what pro wrestling can aim for, and I think there's different ways to present wrestling and succeed, but I think the largest scale success is this kind of storyline with the kind of investment that fans have where they don't care whether it's real or fake, to use the old, you know, standby terms. They just can't wait to boo Dominik and cheer Ray. Yeah, Javier.
Well, yeah, and that's why with the emailer who said that liked this one better, because what appeals to me about the Roman Reigns one especially is, you know, besides it being, you know, an overall good story, it's also the performance and the nuance that's gone into the story. This one's a lot more straightforward, you know, a little bit more bombastic, you know, in terms of like, you know, how the players react. But, you know, so I could see why someone might be more, you know, attracted, just like, you know, me, I loved the Fiend storyline and some people hated it. And I thought that was like the best thing going for the longest time. And some people thought it was the worst thing going on. I could see why some people would. I think you'd be in the minority, but I could understand somebody, you know, liking it better.
Yep. All right. One final email, and then I if I remember, I want to look at the Twitter poll that I put up about how confident people are in the finish of the WrestleMania match. JB from Detroit says, one, I was a bit confused as to why WWE decided to dedicate so much time in the Go Home to Mania Raw to the showcase tag matches. They have to come across as filler to get as many wrestlers as possible on both nights of Mania, and I'm not sure why they require that much TV time at all. Adding to that, with the Honor of the Giant Memorial Battle Royal being scheduled for Friday SmackDown, I think Triple H and crew really need to consider their time investment on critical go-home to Mania shows. Yeah, I mean, it was just filler. I mean, it's unabashedly. They're not even trying to hide it. I mean, we're going to take a match at the matches that are scheduled for WrestleMania. They're just filler to get some people on the show who didn't really fit into a featured match. And now we're going to have a filler match that's even a derivative from that to ostensibly promote those matches, but really it's just to fill some TV time because, frankly, we have nothing else to pay off. You know, we're going to hit reset after Mania with so many things. It's the only matches that we can put together that won't just seem completely irrelevant to WrestleMania that also isn't giving away something we want to save for Mania. So, I mean, I'm not bothered by it because I see it for what it is. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, and the matches that we did have, some of them, like the first one, Becky and Io, that ties into the match you're going to have because two single competitors from that, and you got a good match out of that. Yeah, you had the one that the booking wise I hate is like, oh, you're going to have the trope of you're going to have a fatal four way, so now the two teams are going to go up against two teams. Never been a fan of that, but you got a pretty good match out of that too.
Yeah.
So the one that was really the you know, you did have those play-in matches, but that helped to promote WrestleMania as a whole by saying the people who lose this match are not going to go to WrestleMania. Yeah, granted, the match they're going to have at WrestleMania is not worth anything except for their pocketbooks, because they're, you know, much more money there. And I kind of wish they kind of maybe WWE isn't like talking about money, but I think that would have been like, hey, you know, if you get to WrestleMania, you get more money out of it. So, explain that's one of the reasons why they really want to get into that. So that helps, create more, give the WrestleMania, brand more shine. The one that didn't stick out with the only one that to me really stuck out as sore thumb was the Gunther and Dolph Ziggler, but it's like what's
special guest attraction. Yeah, I mean, but show. I mean, there are people who watch Mondays but can't watch or don't watch Fridays. So just show what he's all about. And let Ziggler take some crazy ass bumps.
I mean, to be honest, that really felt like, oh crap, we got like 15 minutes to go. Who's available?
Yeah. All right. So, number two from JB. I see both sides to the argument, but was it a good idea to have Cody versus Solo tonight? I really feel as though Solo could be a great first feud for Cody should he beat Roman on Sunday. However, I also understand that this one over Solo gives Cody much more credibility going into the Mania main event. As always, love the show and go VIP, everyone. Thanks, JB. Obviously, if they wanted to do Cody versus Solo as an intriguing feud, they wouldn't have done this match. But they have other plans, and I don't know what those other plans are, so I can't judge whether it was a mistake. But I'm a little surprised with, how protected Solo was that they fed him to Cody. But I'm also not surprised because they're building up Cody as a guy who can beat Roman. And it was a way to put the WrestleMania main event key players out there on Raw, multiple main events when you think about the tag title wrestlers too. I'm fine with it. I mean, they want people watching Raw, and they, for whatever reason, which will, I assume, become pretty clear in the next few weeks, maybe even this weekend, they weren't leaning on Cody versus Solo as a match to save, protect and save for more build. And they planned ahead enough that there was a little backstory with them, too, after what happened the prior week. Javier.
Well, I mean, the other thing is one of the things that I've heard talked about is, like, is Solo the guy to beat? I can't wait to see Solo versus Roman Reigns. And maybe the whole you're not ready is more of, letting the audience know, hey, yeah, we're not pushing Solo as the guy that needs to turn Roman Reigns, know, slow it down. We still need to develop him some. He still needs to develop some more. That might have been like part of the whole thing. And, in order to sell that message, you also, the equity that he has, they pushed the whole he's undefeated. Not true. He had lost two matches, but they were by disqualification. He's technically unpinned, unsubmitted. Now that I've had time to think about the match and it's sunk in, I wish they had done more in the match in terms of like selling that either Cody got hurt or Cody did something to kind of like if Solo's not going to get involved in his match with Roman Reigns. If the idea was to like, this is why Solo's not going to be available in the match. I felt that the story that went into the match was missing, could have had a little bit more, which is kind of weird to say because usually Cody Rhodes matches have too much going on in them. I kind of wish that there had been a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Consequences to the match. And this didn't really feel like it was as consequential as I would hope, given where we were in the story.
All right, our poll. What's your prediction for Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania? Are you very confident Roman wins, somewhat confident Roman wins, somewhat confident Cody wins, or very confident Cody wins? We have number one vote getter, very confident Cody wins, 40%, which I think is kind of low based on, anecdotally, what I'm trying to read the room. Somewhat confident for Cody is 33%. So we have 73% thinking Cody's winning, but 28%, is that right? Now the percentage has just changed on me a little bit here. Some people just voted. We have 27% voting for Roman. I mean, to me, that doesn't seem like a foregone conclusion in the fan base. It is a 3-1, leaning. It's not minor, but I was almost kind of expecting 80 or 90%. I guess we're close to 80. Very confident Roman wins is 12%. Somewhat confident Roman wins 15%. Does that do those we got like 227 votes in since I put that poll up during the show here. What do you think of the results there, Javier?
I honestly don't have a pulse on what people were thinking, who's going to win or not. But if I were to vote, I'd vote like I'm like 70% sure that Cody wins at this point, particularly after that the promo and the stuff that happened today.
So is that confident or somewhat confident?
Somewhat very confident.
Mostly have a tough confident. Time, yeah, that's funny.
Were you watching Heyman during that last match?
Some of the time. Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, because like I've never seen him react in a match like that, where he's like staring daggers into Cody, which is why I really do think there's something that eventually isn't going to shift into a Heyman Cody feud, because the dag. I mean, he was looking upon him with like unabashed hatred.
It has felt like a Cody Heyman feud already. I mean, Heyman's done the heavy lifting on this. You know.
Yeah.
So. Which has been fun. It's been fun seeing Heyman in a different context, getting to flex a little differently than he normally has been in recent years.
Yeah.
All right, Javier, anything else in your notes you want to bring up? Does Stacey Keibler belong in the Hall of Fame?
I'm going to have to go with Tom Martin's, like, everyone's going to be in the Hall of Fame. So, and I don't want to say anything that might get me in trouble. I think that's about. I am getting a kick out of Sad Corbin. That's what I'm going to call him. Sad Corbin, just like, you know, come on, what's going on? Because he's not bum ass Corbin, but he's kind of just like, you know, mopey, depressed Corbin. And the whole Chelsea and Sonya Deville is like a match made in hell. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
The Karens, they said it.
Graves has been he did that last. I think it was on SmackDown, or he did at some point where he's like, next up is going to be Karen. I mean, Chelsea Green. So he's already been trying to push that idea.
Yeah.
And I think I think that name is going to stick, because they were Adam Pearce hashtagged. Complaint department. So that might actually be their legitimate name. So.
Cool. All right, Javier. Thanks. What do you want to plug?
Well, I mean, just keep a lookout for the primer, that novel that I'm going to have to write for WrestleMania of 13 matches. So I got to get started on that tomorrow. So,
I look forward to it. Yeah. Go to pwtorch.com, everyone. Check that out. Got lots of other stuff up, including some details on CM Punk.
Let me give it a little bit more of a hard sell, because I write that with the idea, because my best friend only watches the pay-per-views, so I kind of write it basically for him. I give a story in a nutshell section, which is just like, you know, one very long run-on sentence of like just a gist of what's going on, and then break it down like the stuff that just the stuff that you would need to know and some details that might come into play in the match, so that, you know, because WrestleMania usually a lot, I at least that was my experience, that we get together with friends who normally wouldn't watch wrestling, and they're like, hey, what's going on? You know?
Yeah.
Well, this is the storyline. So, you know, you could use that to like, you know, it literally is a primer for your friends who are normally not watching, and you give them like a quick, you know, rundown on what's going on.
Yeah. So read it, and also send links to your friends who are casual fans to read it.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, and a lot of stuff going on with CM Punk over the past few days. So we got some articles up on that, a VIP Wake Keller hotline that led to some conversation on Twitter today.
Such a diva.
check it out, pwtorch.com. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Javier, thanks so much. Looking forward to your primer, and really enjoyed talking with you here for nearly 2 hours.
Always, Wade. Have a good one, man.
Yep, you too.